This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachowiak. More than 4,700 students were eligible for migrant education services in North Carolina last year. And these are children of migrant workers who move around as their parents follow the seasonal crops. And that means these students are frequently changing schools. So does North Carolina make sure that these students don't get lost in the system? Alex Granados is senior reporter for Education NC, and he's been looking into migrant student education. He joins me now. Welcome back, Alex.
Hey, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. To what were we talking about? We talk about migrant students in North Carolina. Who are we talking about?
So these are students who are basically children of migrant farm workers in North Carolina. As you know, North Carolina has a huge migrant farm worker population. We have lots of farms, lots of crops. And so these are the kids that the parents bring with them as they travel from state to state doing their work.
And we're talking about 4,700 of them. So we have some handle on roughly the number of these kids, right?
We have some handle on roughly the number of students. But the issue is that getting these numbers requires people on the ground to actually make contact with the families, find the students, et cetera. And so those are the students that they find, right? So there's no telling if there are other students that haven't been found or what have you. So that's what we know about.
So we would think that this would be kind of catch as catch can. The students find themselves in a school district. Maybe they do, maybe they don't get into that school district because they might be leaving in a few months. But it turns out that some thought has been given to the education of these children, at least at the federal level. Tell us how this works.
Yeah, so the idea behind it is, so migrant students, they travel with their families. So they're often traveling multiple locations throughout the United States during the year. One common pattern is to go from Florida to North Carolina to Michigan, and there's other patterns. But so their schooling is disrupted as they go between districts. And so the idea behind the Federal Migrant Education Program is to make sure that there's some continuity for these students as they go throughout the districts. Because as you can imagine, there's different things being taught, different tests being taken. And so you need to have people on the ground to kind of make sure they can get acclimated into the new school system, get enrolled in the new school system, and get any extra help they might need, be that tutoring or even things as simple as, like backpacks or getting signed up for free and reduced lunch and just all those sorts of things that a lot of people take for granted.
All right, so you talked about this being a federal program. Then what role does the state have and what's the relationship between the federal government and the state in terms of the execution?
So it's a federal program. The federal program has all the money, and essentially a state can get money from the federal government to administer this program based on a formula that's largely based on the number of migrant students you have in the state. And so the money goes from the federal program to the states, and then the state can either administer the program at the state level, or they can kind of sub-grant that money to local districts or other organizations, depending on the state.
All right, so what does it look like in North Carolina? What kind of programs are available for these kids who are moving around?
So there's multiple districts that there's a person at the state level who's kind of overseeing the whole thing. And then there are multiple district level programs that are kind of working, getting sub grants and working with the state. And, they have different staff members. They usually have someone that's kind of the head of the department. And then they'll have a family liaison, many of them do, who can work with the parents to make sure that they're getting into school, make sure that they understand the rules in the school and all those kind of little things that most people just think families know. And then there's the recruiter, and the recruiter's the person who goes out to the farms, goes out to the houses, tries to find out if a family has students that need to be enrolled in school. And then they're also looking for other people called out-of-school youth. These are basically people who are between the ages of 18 and 21. They're not in school. They're working in the fields, but they're still eligible for help from the migrant education program. So they might get help, maybe pursuing a GED or maybe even something as simple as getting, ESL help.
Now, this recruitment can pose its own challenges. As you point out in your article, the fact is you have to build trust before you start walking into these camps and communities and asking a lot of questions, right?
Yeah, so there's this great anecdote that these two recruiters I worked with in Bladen County told me about. There was one camp that they go to often now, but the first time they went there, they encountered some young men, probably in the age range of the out-of-school youth. And they said, hey, we're with the migrant education program. We want to see if you're eligible. We'd like to talk to you about what we can do to help you. We need to see your IDs because we need to know how old you are to see if you're eligible. So one of the guys says, well, I don't have my ID on me. Let me go get it. And he goes back to the workhouse where they all stay, and he just never comes back. And at some point, she asked the other guys what happened to him, and they said, oh, well, he jumped out the window. He was scared of why you were here. And so that was a while ago. And now they go to this camp all the time because they've gotten to know the people. They've gotten to know, you know, the people who run the camp, and they've developed trust. And so as new people come in, they have old people who kind of tell people what the deal is. There's an understanding of why they're there, but it takes time and it takes, you know, consistent help. Like, they have to show that there's a value to what they're doing and that they're there for good reasons.
And a value to going to school. And not that education isn't important to everybody, including migrant families, certainly. But the fact is, you talked about the migratory pattern. Let's talk about Florida, North Carolina, Michigan. The standards in those places are so different that students get a little bit, a sense of, well, why am I doing this? It's not important.
Right. It can be a problem because in Florida, for example, there are, particularly at the high school level, there are some high schools that the way they run their credit system, it's like 8 classes a semester and you get a half a credit a semester. In North Carolina, many high schools, you get 4 classes a semester and a whole credit a semester. So if you're coming mid-semester to North Carolina from Florida, you may have 8 subjects that you have partially completed a half credit in, and then your options are, you know, these 4 classes, and you can get a whole credit, and it's just a complete mismatch. And there's a variety of tools that North Carolina uses. You can use, kind of credit recovery via, technology, internet, that kind of thing. There's also a program in Florida that students who leave Florida can use to kind of make up the credits once they've left the state.
But here's where your recruiter is important, somebody who can actually help you navigate all this.
Exactly, and that's the key, having someone who understands what's available and who can lead them to the resources that they can use.
And, of course, there's variation even across the state. If you're in Buncombe County or down east, you're there at different times of the year. Talk about some of the challenges that presents.
Right, so, I mean, it's different challenges depending on when the migrants are coming in. So in Bladen County, for instance, they get a lot of migrants towards the end of the school year. And I heard, some people talking about literally migrant students would show up 2 weeks before the end of grade exams, which are high stakes exams that, you know, if they're coming from Florida, they haven't been learning the same material. And so they're totally unprepared for it. But they're in North Carolina now, so they still have to take it. And so that's a big issue in Bladen County. But in other places like Buncombe, Henderson County, the students are coming more over the summer or at the beginning of the school year. And then the issue there is less academic and more emotional. So other students get to know these migrant students, the teachers get to know them. And then, you know, suddenly the crop season's over, they have to go to a new state, and everybody's saying goodbye. And it's just very emotional and sad.
What are some of the stories that you've heard from people who are administering this program, who do the recruiting and go into the areas, some of the stories they've heard about the challenges that they face?
Well, I mean, one of the big challenges that I've heard from multiple people is just the issue of making sure that migrant students don't drop out of school, right? And so in Henderson County, for instance, there was somebody who worked in the department there who said, you know, the key to keeping kids in school and keeping them from going to work in the fields is having a strong migrant education program that provides them alternatives to going to work in the field, right? But the temptation is there. I talked to one migrant farm worker who, she's a second generation. Her parents were migrant farm workers. She was enrolled in school, and she did the Florida, North Carolina, Michigan route. And she described how once she got into ninth grade, her grades weren't that good. Her parents were working in the fields. And she said, the school's pointless. I'm just going to drop out. I'm going to go work in the fields. Now she's in her early 20s, and that's what she's doing. And she says, yeah, I kind of wish I'd thought about that more. That wasn't great. And now she has kids, and she's trying to navigate that same situation with them.
We're talking about support for the students. What about the schools themselves? Because I think this must be challenging for them to see students come and go and maybe not be there the full year. Is there any kind of support for the schools or in the schools through this program?
I mean, the support largely comes from the migrant education program. So to the extent that there's support for the schools, it is, you know, those recruiters, those family liaisons trying to help facilitate, you know, the relationships between the migrant students and their families and the school systems.
And does the school, I mean, I wonder about if it varies from place to place or if you've heard, because I think there might be some frustration on the part of individual schools that may have given up, not try as hard because they don't see the student the whole year. I mean, any talk about sort of having to encourage the schools to take these students as seriously as other students?
I didn't hear a whole lot of that. I heard anecdotally some people talking about teachers who would get frustrated when they get a whole crop of new students towards the end of the school year and they have to prepare them for the end of grade tests, and, you know, the students are only there for 2 weeks. So I've heard that, you know, there can be some frustration on the part of teachers. But then I also heard about teachers who really embrace this role and this opportunity to help these students, even though they're here for a short time.
All right. Alex Granados, senior reporter for Education NC. Always good to see you. Welcome back. And thank you, Alex.
Thanks so much, Frank.
You can find a link to his reporting at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, did a Supreme Court justice use religious doctrine to help shape Native American land rights in this country? We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.